From Lago di Garda, Italy, welcome to the GCN Show!
Welcome to the GCN Show. Coming up this week, the illegal bike that saw a rider thrown off the Giro d'Italia. We'll be discussing the archaic rule that Lorena Vives fell foul of, why it's unfair, why it should be updated, and whether or not it was the correct decision in the first place.
We've also got the lowdown on the biggest gravel race of the year, Unbound, in which the spirit of gravel officially died and 32-inch wheels became a thing. Plus, a wrap-up of the Giro, some positive news for cycling safety in London, and a mega nugget that explains the simple everyday bedtime hack that could have some similar performance gains to an altitude camp.
Yeah, stick around to the end, everyone, because it is the best nugget ever.
So far.
So far. Mega nugget.
This week in the world of cycling, we learned that Jonas Vingegaard has become the eighth man in history to win all three Grand Tours, sewing up the Giro d'Italia at the weekend with a fifth stage win, as well as the overall classification.
Yeah, his margin of victory was a very comfortable 5 minutes 22 seconds. How would you rate the race, Dan?
Oh, you didn't watch yesterday's racing news show, in which I gave it 2.5 out of 5. Sorry.
Yeah, busted. A little bit meh then, I guess.
Yeah.
Unlike the Castle Coombe 3-4 category race last week, because we also learnt that Dan here did his first proper road race in 14 years. It's actually by British Cycling and everything.
Proper race that was. And what a race it was.
Oh, well, yeah.
How did I get on? Well, you'll find out soon, because of course we made a video about it. What I will say now is that I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it.
Actually?
I enjoyed it.
Actually?
Yeah.
Oh,
it was great.
Cool. Nice, I enjoyed it as well. Finally this week, we learned that for only the second time in its 26 years of existence, someone has fallen foul of the UCI rule on minimum bike weight.
The unfortunate rider in this point was Lorena Vives of SD Works, who just sprinted to the win on the opening stage of the Giro d'Italia by a country mile, as she usually does. Her bike, though, was subsequently weighed by the UCI commissaires, and it tipped the scales at 6.78 kilograms, which is a whopping 20 grams below the minimum weight limit.
Dun, dun, dun. Now, it wasn't just a case of being demoted to the back of the group she was in, which is often the case if you're seen to have ridden dangerously, for example, but actually it resulted in complete expulsion from the race. She was disqualified. She will take no further part in this year's Giro d'Italia.
Which, given it was a stage with under 100 metres of elevation gain, according to what I've seen on Strava, seems harsh, I guess. We're going to understate it.
Yes. Frankly, Dan, I think it's utterly stupid and a bigger own goal from the UCI than Andres Escobar in the 1994 World Cup.
Hopefully with less tragic results.
So. Yeah, hopefully. Now, the counter-argument to my point there is, of course, that rules are rules, and if you break them, you should pay the price. Speaking of which, we should probably read out the exact rule, shouldn't we, so that we're all clear on just what went wrong. So Article 1.3.019 states the weight of the bicycle cannot be less than 6.8 kilograms.
As rules go, it's quite clear.
It is quite clear, yeah.
However, it was Article 2.12.007, Rule 2.2, which the UCI jury imposed on the day. It states, next to use of a bicycle that does not comply with regulations, that you can have immediate elimination or disqualification from the race.
Yeah, so, as we mentioned, the rules are very clear, and they have been very clear since the year 2000, when said rules were introduced.
And we should probably explain why the rules were introduced 26 years ago. It's because at the time, pro road racing had become rather obsessed with making bikes as light as they possibly could.
Yeah, which meant positive things, like experimenting with new materials, like carbon fibre, but then also taking risks with established materials, like aluminium, even drilling holes in components to save weight.
So understandably, there was a bit of a fear that this obsession could lead to riders racing on bikes that could fail. So at the time, it actually felt like a really sensible rule that was in place to protect the riders of the day.
Yeah, however, in the years since 2000, things have changed dramatically. Advances in knowledge of carbon fibre mean that bikes were easily getting under 6.8 kilos in the rim brake era, weren't they? Most bikes were having to add additional weight, often under the bottom bracket, to put the centre of gravity as low as possible in order to meet the rule.
But then the introduction of disc brakes just a few years ago meant that, initially at least, no bike was really that close to 6.8 kilograms. But again, advances in technology since then mean that you can now have an aero bike with aero wheels and disc brakes and be under that limit if you're not careful. In reality, though, most pro bikes do tend to weigh north of 7 kilos. Some of them, believe it or not, are up to 8.
Yeah. Now, the other thing that is worth stating about this rule is that it applies it to everyone, no matter what their size. So, a little bit like the kerfuffle around bar width last year, it means that a rider like Guy Realini has to ride on a bike that is the same weight as Max Valscheid, who is over twice her size.
It's just ridiculous, yeah. Frankly, isn't it? It puts lightweight riders at a really distinct disadvantage. So Realini's bike makes up around 14% of her overall system weight, whereas for Valscheid, it's half that, at 7%.
Yeah. I mean, that's just not fair, is it,
no.
Really? Now, regardless of the unfairness of the rule, the question really is whether or not the Giro Donna UCI jury should have implemented it in the case of Vibes. On the one hand, again, you could say that the rule was broken.
But on the other side, you could say that with so little climbing, with such a margin of victory, 20 grams made literally no difference to the result and the outcome of the day. Quite frankly, Lorena Vibes could have been on a bike quite a few kilograms heavier and still won that day, I reckon.
She could, yeah. But it's not actually that grinds my gears, so to speak. No, what gets me is that the actual percentage terms of overall bike weight and 20 grams is so small, it's within the margin of error of the scales, isn't it? And actually, the industry standard park tool ones that we use, and I think pretty much everyone uses, I don't know about the UCI, their actual stated margin of error is, you guessed it, 0.02 kilograms. And that, to me, is a crux of it, right? I think the jury, the commissaires, have to be pretty blooming ballsy to make a call with such drastic consequences based on such a small margin.
It's such a big race. She's completely out of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Now, we've been using grams, and we know there's a lot of viewers over in the US still using the old imperial weight, so we thought we'd illustrate exactly what 20 grams looks like with various different articles.
What have you found then?
Well, we've got some park tool scales to start with.
Okay, these are not bike weighing scales, by the way.
No, right, so what we've got to start with, they're not all exactly 20 grams, but we've got quite a cheap spoon here. That's over it, it's 24 grams.
And that is a cheap spoon.
We've got
it?
Some cheap headphones, I don't know whose they are, I just nicked them off a desk. That's slightly less at 15 grams. We've got a toy dinosaur.
Oh, yeah. Ooh,
that's
weighty.
More. That's 24 grams. We've got a pack of tissues, under 16 grams.
Have
and finally.
Any?
No, okay. Finally, we've got part of a banana skin.
Ooh, 21 grams.
I ripped it off to be almost exactly 20 grams. Couldn't be bothered to get the final gram off. But these are the kind of weights we're talking about when it comes to what Lorena Vibes' bike lacked at the end of stage
she
one
lacked
Giro Donne.
Like a quarter of a banana skin.
Basically, yeah, that's all she needed.
Not very much, is it?
Basically, it is almost nothing, yeah. As we've been pointing out, even on a mountain stage, let alone one of the flattest days of the entire year. The question I think I've got, though, is why it was so close to the weight limit to begin with. Mechanics tend to give themselves a little bit of leeway just in case their own scales are off, typically shooting for about 6.9 kilograms for their bikes, from what we understand. Although SD Works claimed they measured the bike before the start at 6.83.
Maybe, Dan, she got a flat midway through the stage and lost sealant. Because 20 grams of sealant actually wouldn't be that much.
No.
She might not have noticed, and then, boom, there you go. I mean, it does seem a little bit of a slip-up from SD Works, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think you see it from that side as well.
They did give a strongly worded statement, didn't they? In it, they said that Vibes had raced on exactly the same bike multiple races this year without any issues. And they also said there was a discrepancy between the first and the second weighing that the UCI did at the end of the stage, which was a 50-gram difference.
Although they didn't say whether it was 50 grams more or less than the first weighing. I'm going to presume less. So it seems like they were using this to highlight possible inaccuracy of the scales, because if it was more, the bike would have passed the test, wouldn't
it? As in, you think that they weighed it at the beginning of the stage and then at the end of the stage and it was 50 grams lighter?
No, I think they weighed it twice at the end of the stage just to double check. And I think SD Works, what they're claiming is that there was a 30 grams difference in the measurement they got from their scales. Therefore, how accurate are the scales?
Hmm. I mean, that could be a valid point, couldn't it? Hmm. And it's not just the margin of error either for most top end scales, but they can be affected by things like wind blowing the bike, can't they?
Or
like, yeah, temperature, calibration drift.
Yeah. None of this is really any consolation to Esti Works or Lorena Vives, though, is it? I mean, she's not short of wins as a pro rider, of course, but the Giro Donne, it is one of the biggest races of the year, and it will have a negative impact on the exposure her team sponsors get at this part of the year.
Well, you know what they say, Dan? All publicity is good publicity.
True, maybe it's increased the amount of exposure they're getting.
Yeah. A big loss for the race, though.
Yeah.
I mean, like, a proper big loss. Now, you might be wondering, who else has fallen foul of this rule in the last 26 years, as we mentioned? If you watched yesterday's racing news show, you would think not. So I'm led to believe, because I didn't see it. but I seem to remember this happening before.
If you can't tell, Si is particularly happy about this. He's been very smug in the office today.
I have. Yeah, because, I'm feeling smug because you, our racing expert, had forgotten about it. John Cannings, the fount of all knowledge of cycling trivia, had forgotten about it.
But you remembered.
Well, vaguely.
And it was confirmed by Google.
Google confirmed that Italian rider Fabiano Luperini, the same race, then called the Giro Rosa, failed the bike weight check in 2013. And she was actually sitting in second place overall.
She was, yeah.
But her bike was found to be 200 grams under the minimum weight limit. So quite a bit more. And she also was DQ'd after stage six. Although, weirdly, her result from that stage still seems to stand.
Yeah, I saw that, which is a bit weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
Anyway, 200 grams is, without wishing to state the obvious, quite different to 20 grams. It's this lot times two.
10 more banana skins, basically.
And that was a mountain stage as well. In the case of Vives, I think common sense probably should have prevailed. The bike was not unsafe and would have offered no advantage being lighter by 20 grams. I think they should have given a warning, maybe a slap on the wrist, but let the results stand.
Agreed. It's an archaic rule that should have been amended years ago, shouldn't it really, to be fair to all riders. You don't just need to have a bike weighing 6.8 kilos, which we say. In fact, it could make things a bit more interesting if they reduced it, couldn't it?
It could do, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, in fact, why not just have no minimum weight limit at all? We could have some genuinely interesting tech choices then being made on the big mountain
could
stages.
Do, yeah. I mean, Mr. Ollie Bridgewood would be like a pig in poo, wouldn't he?
He would,
if that was the case. Choices, choices.
Yeah. Although, with his current mantra, mass is gas,
yes.
I don't think he'd go for a 5 kilo bike anymore. He'd go for aero.
He would do, yeah.
Any day of the week.
Thought that through, I'd like.
Yeah. Now, the one thing I think we should say is that while this is a UCI own goal on epic levels, it is almost certainly a team of commissaires or the jury working in isolation. So one could imagine when the big decision makers in Switzerland found out about this, they probably had their heads in their hands,
probably,
knowing all of the negative press that they were going to get for being, well, dog's body. Well, I don't know. What is? You know what I mean.
Jobs worse,
yeah.
Yeah, the UCI does get dragged through the mud for things like this, doesn't it? But at the end of the day, as the governing body, they made the mud in the first place, surely.
I mean, I guess they kind of did, didn't they, really?
Right, as ever, we would love to hear your thoughts. Do you think the disqualification was overly harsh, or do you think rules are rules, and since they were broken, it was a fair decision?
Yeah, let us know in the comments section down below. It is set to rumble on, this one, isn't it, by the way? Esti Works are, they've joined the queue of people suing the UCI. Haven't they?
UCI lost their last one, didn't they?
They did indeed, yeah. To be fair, I kind of hope Esti Works win. I actually thought when I first read the headlines that it would be overturned. I genuinely thought someone from UCI
would see sense.
Evil there would see sense and be like, what are you doing? And but no, lo and behold.
Yeah.
20
right.
grams.
Just before we move on, a reminder that the prints, T-shirts and bottles that we have for the Grand Tours in Italy are still available in our online store. You can find that over at shop.globalcyclingnetwork.com or by scanning the QR code that should be on screen now.
Yeah, it is one of the ways in which you can help us to continue to make the free-to-view videos that we have here on GCN, GCN Tech and GCN Racing. One of the other ways is to make a small donation with a super thanks.
Yeah, you can. So you'll find an icon just under this video which says super thanks. Click on that and you can donate the amount of your choosing if you feel the content deserves it.
Yeah. Just if anyone's worried, by the way, we will not be putting that money towards a pair of white socks for James Pickering. He put a shout out in the video. This is GMBN James Pickering. His white socks were so filthy in Saturday's video that he said, could you donate a super thanks to buy him some more socks.
Yeah.
I know, disgraceful. Yeah. But anyway, yeah. Thank you, though.
And now it's time for Cycling Shorts.
Cycling Shorts now, and we're going to start with news from Kansas and what was perhaps the biggest race at the weekend, Unbound.
You have just offended most of Italy right there, so I can't see your logic. Unbound is basically like the Tour de France of gravel racing.
Oh,
at this
kick
point,
the Italians
it?
When they're down, Dan.
Sorry, but it is true.
It is true.
Yeah. It dominates the gravel season like no other race in terms of the depth of the fields, the racing exploits, and all the new tech that bike brands launch out there.
Yeah, this year the racing and the bike launches seem to be closer linked than ever as Specialized dominated the headlines in what was a spectacularly wet and muddy edition.
Epic.
The photos looked
they were epic.
Brilliant.
It was an epic race.
Yeah, yeah. Now, Specialized launched a new bike in the days before, what is the fifth generation of their Crux, which has morphed from a cyclocross bike in the early days into a true gravel race bike. Now, they say it is the fastest gravel bike ever.
Mm. Well, they would, wouldn't they?
They would, yeah.
Although, to be fair, it was quite successful at the
yes,
week,
it
wasn't
was,
it?
Yeah.
Specialized sponsored riders took first and second in both the men's and women's races and also caused quite a stir with their team tactics because former winner Keegan Swenson gave up a wheel to eventual winner Mats Verschmidt.
Yeah. So the two teammates were well clear of the rest when Schmidt punctured. Swenson waited with him, which, you know, they wouldn't have done if they weren't teammates.
No.
They tried to fix the flat together, couldn't, and then Swenson gave up his wheel and his race, basically. Although, impressively, he did battle back to fifth, didn't he? And that was after not only fixing the flat, but also retrieving bits of his rear hub from the mud that had dropped out of the wheel
chain. I
couldn't
believe he found them. I was actually watching live at that point.
Oh,
and, I was looking at the comments to figure out what was happening there. The spools had come out after the cassette had dropped off when they were changing wheels, but he managed to find them and get on his way and come fifth.
Fair play.
Unbelievable.
In my bike room, my workshop at home, there is no way you can find anything when it hits the floor, let alone like in a muddy...
That was impressive in itself.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it?
We'd like to know more about the Specialized Crux. You can hear from me and Alex on the tech show this week because I feature on that show, Si. In the women's race, Sofia Gomez-Villafane won, outsprinting a group of five riders, but again having benefited from the presence of teammate Jere Cachures, who finished second and had been really aggressive in trying to break up the group. I actually read that Villafane felt she didn't have the FTP to go solo, so wanted to wait for the sprint at the finish.
Yeah, now, is all of this teamwork a turning point in gravel racing? Personally, I'd say not quite yet.
Oh, do you?
No. Well, so... Granted, in both men's and women's races, the Specialized riders benefited from the presence of their teammates. But I sort of feel like it's still such a way off from what we see in road racing, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? Like, you can have a couple of teammates that help each other, whereas the day that we get a team of domestiques controlling a breakaway to reel them back in for a sprint finish at Unbound, I mean, that is the day that gravel officially... Yeah. Loses it.
I'm waiting for that point because I had no one at Seven Gravel to help me bring it back for a sprint, unfortunately.
No.
What I would say is a turning point, though, Si, is the fact that US riders evidently do not have gravel sewn up like they once did anymore. There were five home riders in the top 10 of the women's race, which seems okay, doesn't it?
Seems okay.
But in the men's, only one.
Only one.
Only one.
Yowzers. That was Keegan, wasn't it?
It was in fifth place, yeah.
Right, the one other story that I was particularly interested in, Dan, was how the 32-inch wheel gravel bikes would fare.
What
now,
might be.
This is a development that I am 100% not looking forward
Connor
to.
Connor is.
Well, yes, Connor is. We'll get onto that in a minute. It's coming to mountain biking, these bigger wheels, and I suspect it's on its way to gravel racing too.
Scott caused the biggest stir pre-race by announcing that last year's winner, Cam Jones, will be racing on a prototype 32-inch wheel gravel bike. Si, your fear, I think, was that he would steamroll it over everything and everyone with his giant wheels and therefore usher in a brand new era of gravel bikes, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Massive gravel bikes. Now, Connor, as you said, at 6'8" or 2 metres, 4 centimetres, is incredibly excited at this development because the bikes would actually fit him. Granted, I am sure that those bigger wheels will be faster on rough gravel in a straight line. Really, just like 29er wheels were on mountain bikes, right? But I just don't want them. I just don't want them, okay? Now, fortunately for me, Jones could only finish 10th in the race, yeah, which is frankly rubbish.
Yeah, totally rubbish.
Totally rubbish, yeah.
If you're listening to this, Connor, Si doesn't want 32-inch wheels, so you can't have them. unfortunately for you, though, Si, talking about the results at the XL, Robin Gimperle was also riding the big-wheeled Scott in that event. It's 350 miles long and did steamroller over everybody.
Yes. Now, I was hoping to gloss over that bit, yeah, but anyway. Svenja Betts won the women's XL race, by the way, on a normal-sized bike, covering the incredibly tough muddy course in 27 hours, 11 minutes. Apparently, there was a half marathon's worth of running in that 350-mile race.
Was there?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the gap between the top three and the men's was almost 3 hours, I think.
Whoa.
There were some big gaps. I have some good news for you, though. You kind of breathe a sigh of relief because Scott have said they don't have any plans to release that 32-inch wheel bike.
Yet. I mean, they will do, plainly. Yeah,
probably, won't they? Now, we should probably talk more about what actually happened in the Giro men's and women's races last week, shouldn't we? As mentioned at the start, Jonas Vingegaard became a member of a very exclusive club by winning the Giro, having already been successful twice at the Tour, of course, and then once last year at La Vuelta.
Yeah, his eyes will now turn to the Tour de France, where he'll hope to challenge Pogacar for the win. In the last week of the race, Jonathan Milan won the final day into Rome. Sepp Kuss completed his collection of Grand Tour stage wins. Paul Magnier won a stage and claimed the Maglia Ciclamino, and Michael Valgren won his first Grand Tour stage ever almost 4 years after a crash that almost ended his career. That is a really nice comeback.
I love seeing him win that stage.
Yeah, properly cool. Second and third on GC, by the way, went to Felix Gall and Jai Hindley, Perth local.
Yes,
respectively.
Very good. Are you a Perth native now, Si?
Oh, I feel like, yeah, I feel like an affinity to the Perth Rise. Not that I've ever met Jai.
I might lose you as a co-presenter. I think you might move there with your 32-inch wheels or something. Elisa Balsamo actually won the first stage of the Women's Giro after Vibe's disqualification and then crossed the line first in her absence the following day on stage two. Actually, the 1-2-3 was the same on both days in the end after the DQ, Lara Gillespie second and Chiara Consonni in third.
Yeah, now what is happening in the cycling world that doesn't involve racing, I hear you ask? Well, Road CC had an interesting article that follows up on all of the controversy and confusing statements from the Irish government regarding mandatory high-vis for cyclists at night. Now, apparently, according to Ireland's Road Safety Authority, 80% of serious injuries or fatalities to cyclists come in daylight hours, suggesting, therefore, that nighttime visibility is not the principal issue of road safety.
Of course, fewer people ride at night, which isn't to say there's less risk in cycling in the dark, but it does make the point that it's not going to solve the issue of danger to cyclists.
No, but sticking with this subject for a moment, road safety statistics in London were released last week, and there were the lowest number of cycling fatalities for 6 years last year, and that is in spite of the huge increase in cyclists on the roads.
Which is brilliant news, isn't it? Although, tragically, obviously, six people still lost their lives riding bikes in the city, which is six too many. But more cyclists and lower risk is a positive.
It is, yeah. Now, I nerded out a little bit, okay, because Transport for London has an interactive dashboard.
I wonder what you were looking at earlier.
Yeah, where you can dive into the statistics. And one thing I was really interested to look at was pedestrian injuries, because there's been this explosion of anti-cycling rhetoric, mainly in London, but kind of also across the UK, where people feel that cyclists are reckless and endangering pedestrians. So I had a look, seven pedestrians were tragically killed after a collision with a cyclist last year, which, in much the same way as a cyclist fatalities, that's seven too many, right? But for context, 474 pedestrians were killed after being hit by a motor vehicle in the same time.
Yeah, it does really put into perspective, shall I say, where the risk on the road really lies, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And people just forget because cars are so normal that you kind of just... Anyway, there we go. Right, some tech news now.
Oh, I should probably take this bit, Si, since I'm on the tech show this week. No, go on.
Well, I mean, do you want the practice?
No, go on.
Okay. Both are a little bit different to usual. I'll be interested to see whether they make the cut for the tech show, but we'll find out.
Yeah.
So, Omnium cargo bikes.
Yep, did.
Did it actually?
It did, yeah.
Oh, well, fair play. Omnium cargo bikes and Cinelli have teamed up to create a limited run of 120 bikes, which look like a retro modern masterpiece, frankly, finished in the iconic Cinelli laser blue colour. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I absolutely love it.
I thought you would, yeah. I'm not sure we're quite cool enough to ride it, though, unfortunately.
No, probably not.
We also spotted that Isla Rowntree of Isla Bikes fame is poised to release a new gravel bike. She pretty much single-handedly revolutionised the kids' bike industry. And while she scaled back the operation a little bit, is still constantly innovating.
Yeah, I've got to say, meeting her for a GCN video was an absolute privilege. And I love that she's doing this, Dan. So, as you said, she's constantly innovating, like literally making her own bikes, like welding them up. And now she's putting one into production by the look of it. It's a flat bar gravel bike with clearance for mountain bike tires as well. Rack mounts, I mean, it's the works. They describe it as a bike built to be lived with, not fussed over. Which sounds kind of cool, doesn't it?
Does sound cool, yeah. I also bumped into Isla Rowntree at the World Gravel Championships last year.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I mean, we used to race mountain bikes with her, right?
You were on the same team as her, right? Rally.
Would have been, I think.
She rode for a rally.
She did. I'm not sure at the same time, but quite possibly. But yeah, her bikes were just amazing for kids. Yeah. Jude had loads of them. They were fantastic.
Yeah.
Right, we're going to finish Cycling Shorts by announcing the winner of the Cyclowax competition that we announced a couple of weeks ago whilst we were over in Perth, Australia, Si.
Perth.
The entries have obviously now shut, so we can announce the winner as Justin Lockhart. So well done to you, Justin. If we haven't already been in contact with you, we will be soon. We'll get your address and we'll send it out to you.
Quick tip, Justin. I waxed my mountain bike chain.
Oh, you're chuffed with it, aren't you?
Well, yeah. Do you know what? I was a little bit like, I'm not so sure about this. 10 hours in, it's like quite literally blowing my mind. Well, not literally, but you know what I mean. Can we also, whilst we're talking about Perth, Michael Storer, he had a good ride as well, didn't he, in the Giro?
Well, there was Jai Hindley, Ben O'Connor and Michael Storer for a long time battling not just for best Australian, but best rider from Perth.
I know, yeah. Well, yeah, and Michael Storer, I left out of my top Perth World Tour pros. Well, because he's not World Tour, is he?
Oh, yeah, true.
But anyway, but apologies, Michael, because... Yeah,
he's pretty good.
That's some ride, isn't it? So, yeah, big up the Perth Massive.
Next up, it is /bodge of the week. You can get involved in this part of the show by going to globalcyclingnetwork.com/uploader. Our first one this week comes in from Isaac Badu. 3D printed cleats for small folk. My wife is 4'8". She had trouble riding the Zwift Ride platform. I had roughly 2-inch 3D printed cleats made for her. She feels they've greatly changed her comfort and experience. She rides roughly 30 to 45 minutes daily, puts in 60 to 120 watts, has an RPM of 60 to 80. She never leaves the saddle. Apologies, got someone texting me. I'll put that on silent now. The seat post is set to the lowest possible. I've tinkered with the saddle position. I've tinkered with the bar position. I installed the adjustable crank add-on, which is set to 160 mils. But this seems to have made it much more comfortable for her to ride on, which is all you want.
Yeah, interestingly, apparently a few people have said that's dangerous, and he's asking of an independent evaluation.
Well, it'd be dangerous outdoors, maybe. Not on a Zwift ride indoors.
It'd be dangerous in a cafe, perhaps? Yeah. I can't see why it'd be dangerous on a bike outdoors.
I guess you'd need to be careful getting off the bike. But no, I can't see any reason why when you're clipped in that would be more dangerous than a standard cleat.
No.
But maybe we're getting something wrong, Si.
Well, yes. I mean, we might be independent, Dan, but
we're definitely
not.
Again.
We're definitely not experts.
The amount of times we're embarrassed when we look through the comments after a show goes out. Could be one of those ones.
To be fair, it's one of my favourite things. Seeing what people contribute in the GCN show comments. Right, I'm going to say hack then.
Yep, hack from me as well.
Yeah, it's 3D printed after all. Next up, Schreiben Mashed Glücklich.
He's happy with that.
Yeah. Improved handling.
Schrauben.
Schrauben macht glücklich. Yeah. Yeah. I never learned German at school, you know.
Did you not? I did German GCSE.
Did you? No, I for my sins, I did Latin. Yeah. It's not coming very handy in there.
No. Well, mine hasn't either. Ich bin 15 Jahre alt. That means I'm 15 years old. What the age I was at GCSE.
Right, okay, let's get back to the job at hand, shall we? So here we have a town bike with literally a grab handle zip tied onto the bottom of the frame. Do you know what, right? Zip ties be damned. That actually looks like quite a good idea.
That does, doesn't it? I was just thinking exactly the same thing. I can't believe, A, you're saying this about zip ties, but B, I agree.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the zip ties are offensive. Someone's probably going to lose a lot of skin, maybe need some stitches after they've come into contact with the cut ends.
I mean, I guess you can grab the down tube, but then when it's muddy... When it's muddy... Well, yeah, it's a bit further down, isn't it? But when it's muddy, you're going to get your hands muddy, whereas this will stay clear, I would say, for the most part, of mud.
Yeah. Oh, that's a great idea.
Yeah, brilliant.
And there is a bike brand that's got like a leather grab handle
is there?
Stitched in somewhere. I can't remember where I've seen it. But anyway.
This... So you're going hack for the zip-ties grab handle. I am.
Oh, I am. Yeah, I actually am. Yeah. You know what I say about rules, mate?
Yeah.
Meant to be broken.
Slick Cycler space-saving tool carrier. I bought a small torque wrench set to carry as my multi-tool with my new carbon frame gravel bike. The set comes in a very nice but bulky case. It does not fit in the onboard storage space in my down tube. So I made a simple cloth case from an old torn t-shirt that takes up much less space. It's just two pieces of cloth glued together that makes three slots to separate the three pieces that can be easily rolled up. This way the three pieces don't hit each other and get scratched. The photo on the left shows the slots to put the three pieces in, and the photo on the right shows it all rolled up.
I think it's cool. My only slight hesitation is that looks like a lot of gubbins to stick in the onboard storage of your bike. To the extent that, have you actually just basically added all the weight that you saved from your new carbon gravel bike in a torque wrench set?
You went very minimalist for the 7 gravel event, didn't you?
Oh, totally.
Taped about an inner tube, sorry, should I say. Was it to the top tube?
It was the top tube,
yeah.
I mean, I
didn't even want the weight of a bag.
I knew I was going to have the support of my teammate if I needed it. So we had different cassettes, didn't we?
You just have to wait half an hour if it comes near the end.
We'd have had to wait half an hour, and then you had a 12-speed Shimano cassette and I had a 13-speed
Shimano. So I've got a puncture. Can I have your wheel, please? Glad you're waiting here for me.
I'd have swapped you a wheel for a gel, and I think you'd have taken it at that point.
Yeah.
All will be revealed this weekend. No, okay, fair. Maybe I'm being grumpy. It's a hack.
Yeah, I'm going to go hack
it's
as well.
It's nicely done, yeah. And actually, I really like the colour of your old T-shirt. I think that's quite cool.
Mm.
Is it for a tool roll? Anyway, right then. Ray Franks, apologies, Ray, has sent in this picture of simply awesome bike racks. I'm riding from Florida to Maine. It's the Transamerica ride. And came across these bike racks at the express bus stations in Miami-Dade County, Florida. You can lock up your bike, then close the cover and lock that. You will need an extra lock. There's a bike path along the bus line as well. There's also a bike pump and a selection of tools. That is so cool.
That is amazing. I've never seen anything like that.
No, that's absolutely amazing, isn't it? I really like that.
And look at the tool station and stuff as well.
Yeah. Fair play, Miami-Dade County.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you guys, you win the day, frankly, with that.
Well, that is a definite hack from both of us then.
It is, yeah.
Don't forget to get involved. Send in your hacks and bodges that you've done yourself or that you've seen out and about, and we'll go through the best four next week.
Yeah. I mean, technically, that's probably not a hack, is it? Because someone's actually officially made
true.
That. But still, yeah. we like what we see. Thumbs up. It's time for Caption Competition Now, that part of the show where you get a chance to get your hands on a coveted GCN Camelback water bottle. All you got to do is put a witty caption in the comment section down below. We'll pick a winner next week after we have dealt with last week's results.
Yep, this was the photo that we gave you last week. It was Vingegaard, then in the blue jersey as leader of the mountains competition, looking a little bit unhappy as he clasps a humongous glass of...
It looks like a very small Jonas Vingegaard. Mass is not gas at that size, is it really?
Our winner this week is Stephen Lapin, or Lapin. Caption competition. Hey, Campenarts, don't you dare Pinot in my Grigio.
Nice, I like that. The reference, of course, is to Victor Campenarts, who I actually never got to the bottom of this story because it kind of grossed me out, but he was weeing in water bottles.
He was, yeah.
Why?
Was it because you're not allowed to pee in public and there was a lot of public apparently, so he was doing it in the middle of the bunch that they couldn't see.
God, how was he doing that?
I don't know, apparently Sagan used to do it.
Really?
Yeah.
It's quite dexterous, isn't it?
It is, yeah. I've been trying it the last couple of weeks, I can't get it right. Anyway.
Yeah, get in touch and we will get your GCN Camelback water bottle out to you.
We will indeed. We've got a slight Jonas Vingegaard obsession going on at the moment because he features on this week's caption competition as well.
So he does.
And now in the pink jersey, which of course he ended up winning in Rome. This is the photo. If you're listening rather than watching, he's kind of got his back arched. I will get you started. All right, guys, who's got my back?
I kind of see what you've done there.
Yeah.
Yeah, nice.
Does look lean, doesn't he?
He looks very lean. He also looks... that's the closest shave I think I've ever seen of anyone.
A face?
Yeah, well, I mean, he just... he looks kind of like... Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, well, he was attempting to grow a moustache, which was a bit of a flop.
Was it actually?
By his own admission, yeah. He basically said something along the lines, if you win some, you lose some. I lost that, won't be doing it again.
I mean, At least Jonas and I have something in common, Dan. The inability to grow a moustache.
Moustache?
I don't think I could.
When did you last try?
I mean, I've never tried.
Do you actually never try? How do you know you can't grow one then?
Well, because I shave sporadically, and when I shave off, I'm like, ooh, that looks bad. I mean, if enough of you hit the like button, I'll happily give it a go.
Well, I think we need to raise money for charity if I'm to have to look at that. Right, anyway, put your captions in the comments section down below. We'll pick a winner next week. We will shortly let you know what's coming up on the channel this week, but first up, obviously, some comments from last week's videos. Last week's show was about whether cyclists are weak or not. Jay Relford said, "This just in, GCN reporters have discovered functional fitness."
Whoa, whoa, whoa. GCN reporters?
Yeah, that's quite a compliment, actually, isn't it?
Wow, yeah. Thanks for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've never been called anything quite as good as that before.
Dorothy B, been in the gym for 18 months. As heavy weights I can manage, a functional training program being followed, I feel like a new woman and much better on the bike.
That's cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like an opinion echoed by many, many people. I like this one, though, from rchub4934. Cardiovascular fitness gives you a long life. Adding strength training gives you a quality life.
Yeah.
I thought that was really nicely put, that.
It is, yeah. David Stewart, I'd recommend doing squats every day at home for free. All you need is a mirror and a broom handle. Using your own body weight and correct posture is very effective. I do about 200 a day.
I couldn't believe that he does 200 body weight squats every day.
Now, that's a lot, isn't
that
it?
That is an awful lot.
Yeah, because
lot.
As pointed out by David, if you do them properly, even without any extra weight, they're not easy.
No. And that's going to take quite a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can keep your body weight squats, David, frankly, but fair play for doing them. And if they work, that's great. I copied this one. What's the reference to? He can't even do a pull-up. Shameful.
Yeah, we might have mentioned you last week. So.
I thought that might relate to me somehow.
Yeah.
Oh, he's like, yeah!
I also mentioned you not being able to do a barbell bench press with any added weight.
I think I did 20 keys.
Yeah, you managed the bar.
Yeah. I can open jam jars, though.
Oh, yeah?
I've never met a jam jar I can't open.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, and yeah. I can do all the things that I need to do, like take tyres off rims without tyre levers. I've got functional fitness.
Yeah.
I just, if my life depended on doing a pull-up.
I reckon you could do one, then.
If my life depended on it.
Yeah,
probably.
Yeah.
I reckon, yeah.
He's like,
I don't really feel ashamed. Maybe I should. I'll practice doing pull-ups again. Peter Wood said, back in the 80s, Joep Zoetemelk, remember him?
Yep.
Some people will. He entered a Superstars fitness show. He came dead last and achieved one dip in the how many dips in a minute test. Brian Jacks, the eventual winner, did 100.
Wow.
Cyclists traditionally have not come out of those competitions well.
There was an equivalent in the UK, wasn't there? Then Kevin Keegan was the legend of that. I remember him dipping for days in a minute.
Yeah, he bet he crashed in the bike race.
Oh, he did, didn't he?
Yeah, a really nasty crash in the bike. And they weren't wearing helmets either.
Obviously, we can't afford to get the rights to show you that crash.
No.
But, still. Underneath the Super Nerd tryout, this is Connor trying to join the club. Jim Kappa, but seeing Connor and Jonathan riding together just look like two regular people. Usually, when Connor rides with the guys, it looks like a dad out with his kids.
Yeah, it was quite cool. It was really sweet, actually. Connor, I think, was genuinely loving having
a rider
of the same size. Imagine if we had 32-inch wheel bikes as well.
Yeah.
Oh, there we go.
Loving it.
Sam B542 said, made me laugh out loud. Four times.
Wow.
Yeah, great stuff. As a larger man myself, I was rooting for you, Connor.
Randy Chapman. Jonathan, thank you for helping our lovable Connor. Connor is my favourite super nerd. Has he joined, has he?
Well.
You snotty little boys let him in, lol. This was a great show. You're totally a super nerd, Connor. And he was correct. The best you'll have ever done is when Connor coached you, lol.
Yeah. Randy, I believe... she had a comment in last week too, didn't she? Where she described our Italian colleague, Alan Marangoni, as yum.
Oh, yes, yum.
I feel a bit sorry that Connor has not been described as yum.
No.
Lovable, yes, not yum.
Yeah.
No one wants to be that guy.
Friend, no more than that.
Basically, yeah, friend material. But There we go. Anyway, and then underneath, we've got loads of great comments this week. Yeah. Underneath the UK's toughest amateur road race, Suggy said, really enjoyed that. Excellent watch. Question, did James break a spoke on Alex's derailleur? Yes, he did I believe. Yes, he gave it quite a whack.
SH Bear, seeing Connor go into race mode is awe-inspiring. Going from light-hearted presenter to race pro gives a true insight into what it takes mentally as a race professionally. I think we were given a real insight here. I honestly hope we'll get to see the side of his personality for a full race again. He wasn't at Castle Coombe for our race the other night.
He wasn't, no. But maybe if Randy watches that video, she'll say he's yum, because suddenly she's seen a different side to him.
What, in the video he's not in?
No, in this one.
Oh, I see, yeah.
His race mode is awe-inspiring.
Yeah.
That might do the trick.
Joe Nakamoto, should I say, this made me want to bike race, and I'm a bloody triathlete. Well, we did our job well then.
We did indeed, yeah. Thank you, Joe. That's possibly the best compliment we could ever receive. And then underneath the Ollie Gaines video from Sunday, less weedy, more speedy, according to Richard Gill. I like that one.
New hashtag for Ollie there.
Absolutely.
Ethic world, well, difficult comparison. Not the same course, surely not the same weather conditions. An interesting point of comparison is maybe the competitors. I noticed that a certain Dave Scott was part of the Fonda in both years. Last year, he was a few seconds ahead of Ollie Bridgewood, whereas this year, a few minutes ahead. Any thoughts on that?
Dun, dun, dun. Well, I mean, when you start looking, Dan, he's right.
Is he?
Yeah, different course. Everyone went quicker.
Imagine how much weight that guy put on Dave Scott.
Yeah.
To get that much
quicker. I think we need some more investigating here. I don't think it's quite as clear cut, Massey's gas. And I say that as someone who can't do a pull-up. Basically, I'm just looking for an excuse not to go to the gym here. Anyway, we'll finish on this one, shall we? The Biondino. Ollie, you are the absolute king, bravissimo, love heart emoji. Yeah. So there we go. Bet he wouldn't have had that response if he hadn't been going to the gym.
Right then, Super Nugget coming up very shortly indeed. First up, what's on the channel this week? On Saturday, well, it's a racing weekend actually, isn't it?
It is,
on Saturday, we've got a race. It's the Crystal Palace Criterium.
The oldest bike race in the world.
Is it really?
That's why they've gone and done it. Cool. Yeah, they've gone and raced the oldest bike race in the world.
They being Alex and Connor. And on Sunday, as I mentioned, it's our race over in Nanup, near Perth in Australia, Seven Gravel.
I'm really excited about this one.
Yeah.
We haven't actually seen it yet, have we?
We haven't yet, no. Hopefully it'll be a good one.
Yeah, it might be less excited, but, you know, I think it should be all right. Anyway, stay tuned. Sunday, that one's coming out, isn't it? Right then, time for, as Dan said, the most anticipated end of show nugget of all time, probably anywhere ever.
Right, this is about a new study that has examined the angle of your bed.
Stick with us.
Yeah.
Yeah, the angle of your bed. So we first saw this from Aitor Viribe on X. When I say we, I mean Dan, because you're the only one on X.
Yeah, the only one old now.
Now, the research group of Matze, Gjell and Larsen, oh, and Lundby as well, can't forget him, had previously discovered that reducing blood pressure in the large veins near the heart by resting in a tilted head-up position caused the body to release more EPO.
However, because creating new red blood cells takes weeks, the researchers wanted to test a long-term application. So they designed this study to see if sleeping on a slight incline of 6 degrees... head up tilt, for 5 weeks would lower central venous pressure enough to trigger EPO release, promote red blood cell production, and ultimately expand the participants' total red blood cell volume.
The results were statistically significant, albeit for a small participation group of 9 healthy males over 5 weeks. But the red blood cell volume increased by an average of 104 millilitres, total hemoglobin mass increased by an average of 36 grams, and total blood volume increased by 4.1% due to the combination of more red blood cells and a slight increase in blood plasma.
Now, if that means nothing to you, that 4.1% is apparently the kind of adaptation you'd expect to see after 5 weeks of altitude training.
What?
Incidentally, sleep quality remained consistent whether you were sleeping completely flat or with the head incline. While the physical volume of red blood cells increased, the morning blood test did not show elevated EPO levels, apparently.
Okay. Now, while the results are significant, the researchers say the exact mechanism remains slightly unclear and needs more research.
Still interesting, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Can you imagine if, for all this time, you could have achieved the same result of altitude training by sleeping with your head tilted upwards? didn't need to be on the top of Mount Taylor at all.
No. But what if you put the blocks of wood underneath your bed at the top of Mount Taylor? Already altitude training.
Double marginal gains then, presumably. Yeah. Not even marginal anymore. So buy your blocks of wood before endurance athletes make them out of stock. You can't get them anymore.
Apparently, your blocks of wood underneath your bed need to be 21 centimetres high.
21 centimetres?
It seems quite a lot, doesn't it? That
it does,
would achieve
yeah.
the correct Crikey. Angle on a 2-metre long bed. Presumably, if you've got a super duper king size, you're going to need bigger blocks.
Do they get any longer, the beds, then, or do they just get wider?
I thought you'd get longer beds, don't
21 you? Centimetres is a lot. I think I might find that one quite hard to slip past Lorraine without her noticing.
Well, I tell you what, mate, if you put them under the bed, she would slip probably off the end, wouldn't she?
Isn't that, what, 6 degrees?
Yeah. I'd end up in a crumpled heap at the bottom. Anyway, just tell her it's morning wood anyway, Dan. She'll be all right.
Well, 21 centimetres? It's over 8 inches.
We should probably leave it there, shouldn't we?
All right. I mean, I hope you appreciate the end of show nugget this week.
Are you going to try it?
Maybe when Lorraine's away. Mind you, she's not going to be away for five weeks. No.
I don't think I could get that past.
No.
But it is tempting, isn't it?
Yeah, to find out. Mind you, it's a lot of testing. Anyway, let us know if you're going to try it.
Yeah. Cheers. See you next week.